John Geiger with us, The Angel Effect. We'll take your questions in a moment, and particularly your stories, if you've come across something like this. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, John Geiger with us. John, there is a link, you say, between the angel effect and the imaginary friend that so many children have. Tell me about the tie-in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, much of the research has been done around the imaginary friend or playmates that kids often report, remarkably, up 30%, the figures vary, but a sizable number of children at some point or another describe, begin talking to, or will admit to having an invisible friend. And in many of those cases, you know, it's suggested that those are children who are experiencing stress. So it perhaps their parents are, you know, experiencing marital strife, or a new sibling has come into the family, or there's one parent who's absent for an extended period of time. There's usually or often a link between a stress that child is suffering and the appearance of one of these imaginary friends. So I think that the two phenomena are closely related. I think that really the imaginary playmate or friend, which is, again, always comforting and becomes almost like a best friend for some children, is a manifestation of the same phenomenon.
The angel effect. When this occurs, does anybody ever report that the angel gets angry? I don't want to say evil. That's not what I'm looking for, but angry with the person?
Not really. I mean, there are cases where the presence will kind of rebuke people or say, no, that's not the right decision, or no, you're going the wrong way, that kind of thing. But generally people are describing something, very different. They're describing, a sense of, you know, really this overwhelming sense of love and comfort and help. You know, this young guy, David Jansen, who is just a kid, caught in a terrible fire in a high rise. It was a fatal fire. And, he felt that he was not going to survive that. He basically just lay down on a bed. There was no way out. He felt there was no way out. And he had one of these experiences. He felt a presence, but he felt this overwhelming kind of sense of peace and love and benevolence and then this clarity. And many of these people will describe, suddenly, and then I had this sense of this clarity of mind, this clear thinking. And he was, literally directed to a window and realized then, several steps that he would be able to find his way to a balcony And so he was able to contrive an exit strategy for himself and survive. But, it wasn't for himself in the sense that he every step of the way was being encouraged by this benevolent force or being that was there with him.
Do you find that people worldwide are having these kinds of experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I think, one flaw in my book is that because I'm an English speaker, that's my language, that the cases are overwhelmingly, the examples I give tend to be American, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, British Isles. But the reality is, if you look at the cases, and wherever possible, I do include cases. There's Rwandan bishop who has this experience. There's cases in Israel and cases all over the world. I just wish, my language skills were such that I could, identify
all of those.
All of those. But I know from the numbers of examples I found outside of the English speaking world that this is very prevalent everywhere, and it isn't linked to any specific religion either. There are cases in the angel effect and Superman factor involving non-Christians, so it's not something that is, strictly, related to Christianity it does seem to, the help is there for anyone. And again, whether you believe it's a spiritual experience or not, this benevolent force is there to help you regardless of what your spiritual inclinations, and no matter where you live.
All right, let's take some calls for you, John. Let's go first to Deborah in the Bronx. Welcome to the show. Hi, Deborah.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to share very quickly, as far as the angel effect. I had an experience. One night I was hanging out with a group of people. As the night went on, their behavior was questionable. Long story short, I left the living room to go into the bathroom, and I heard a voice tell me, "Get out." I immediately turned around, grabbed my jacket, and just flew. Later on that night, I was told by someone else who remained there that the host got psychotic, took a machete, and came very close to injuring some of the visitors who were left there.
Jeez. How do you react to that, John?
Well, you know, that was a little hard to know whether that's, you know,
angelic
intuition or whether it's, again, did you actually feel that there was someone with you, or was it simply a voice that you were hearing?
Well, she told her story and hung up.
Oh, okay. I guess, you know, that's an important thing. In some cases, people will describe, you know, a hand holding them back.
Yes.
So they're about to step into traffic, and suddenly they felt like they're pulled back.
That's true.
In other cases, people will describe, you know, a voice, but it's a disembodied sort of voice. So, you know, it's sort of hard to get a read on whether those are classic examples of a sense presence. I tend to, you know, for me, the classic example is where you actually feel a physical presence of someone there who often communicates with you. And that may well have been the case for Deborah, that she may well have felt that there was someone there with her in the bathroom giving her this advice. But, you know, I'd like to have had an answer to that particular question, her case.
I've had so many calls from people who have gone through these angelic experiences with just the hand showing up, whether it pulls you back onto the side of the road or it, you know, pulls you out of the ocean when you're drowning.
Yeah,
it's just the hand. I don't see anything else.
Yes, that's true. And you know, I think it may well be a, you know, a less developed example of the same phenomenon. Because in these cases, you know, they're describing almost a physical sensation. You know, their direction is altered by a physical force. So, you know, that clearly, you know, is suggesting that there's a sense of someone or something powerful there with them, but it's not quite the same thing. I think probably there's another book could be written about those sorts of experiences, but I've tried to focus more on cases where people are actually that, I guess, are longer lasting episodes. You know, some of these are very quick. It's just like an instant, and then it's gone, but it's enough to save their life or to have gotten them out of, you know, potentially, you know, difficult situations like Deborah was facing. So, you know, I tend to look at more, I guess, more fully developed cases that involve sometimes a number of minutes, sometimes a number of hours where the presence is there and where they're receiving help and surviving, you know, in a car wreck where they're trapped, for example, that kind of thing.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We go to Jim in Dangerfield, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George.
Morning, Jimmy.
Great show. And I had an angel experience. It was 10 years ago this month. My wife passed away from pancreatic cancer earlier that year. And I was distraught. I mean, I could not. It was like I couldn't function. And I just kept asking God to, you know, to show me tell me that things are going to be okay. And right in the beginning of January of that year, I was laying in bed, 2:00 in the afternoon, wide awake, and just laying there staring at the ceiling. And all of a sudden, this image just appeared out of nowhere, right above me, stayed there for probably 20 seconds, maybe. And it was the face of an angel, surrounded by a ring of clouds that were like rolling, and the whole image was the brightest white that you could ever see. And after it went away, I just had this amazing just feeling all over, and I was like, I couldn't move. I could blink my eyes, and I laid there for several minutes like I was paralyzed. And this was on a Tuesday. Wednesday night, I went to church, and I was almost scared to say anything. But I called the preacher over after the service and said, look, something happened to me last night, and I want to tell you about it. And when I told him, he just had this wild look on his face, and he said, wait right here. He walks over and gets this notebook and opens up a notebook from like 15 years before where he had the exact same experience.
Same thing. I love it.
And it was just, and then that night I opened the Bible to a verse, and the first thing that I saw was a verse that said, and an angel appeared to him to comfort him.
I love it. Thanks for the story, and sorry for your loss too.
Yeah, thanks, man.
John, do you think sometimes these angelic experiences occur to people who are not believers because they want to convert them or change them?
Ah, that's a good question.
I think that might be the case in some cases.
Well, I mean, I can't really answer it. I do think that there are people who are doubting, you know, that are, you know, would like to find evidence of a spiritual dimension, that, you know, would like to have a belief, and they will have this experience. And you know, a couple of cases I found, this was the confirmation, this was the affirmation sort of something that they had kind of hoped for, you know, something that they would find some sort of meaning in their lives. But those are a tiny minority of the cases. You know, again, many of the cases of secular people or a religious or atheists who have the experience don't attribute a religious explanation to it when they have it. You know, they often can't explain it. They say, well, it was like an angel, but I don't believe in angels. You know, that sort of thing. So they're, you know, Jim's experience. You know, a large number of people contacted me who were, you know, who experienced the loss of a loved one. And in many of those cases, they were comforted in the way that he described, you know, that there was an apparition or a sense of a presence that was, you know, to them an angel. But in other cases, many other cases, and very common, is a sense of the presence of the deceased, where people will, I mean, Nancy Reagan described the late president coming to her, and it's a very vivid sensation, and it's actually called, you know, I call it the widow effect. It's a well-known phenomenon that people who've lost a loved one will feel the presence of that person after their death, and it's as if the person has returned to them in some way, and some people will go to great lengths that they are so aware of this being their deceased loved one that, you know, they'll actually, you know, feel them in bed next to them, or they'll actually set a table for them. They'll set the table. They'll put an extra place setting at dinner because the sense of this presence is so strong that they feel it. You know, they have to feed it. It's there with them. It's very vivid. So, you know, people who have just suffered a terrible loss, you know, as Jim described, and are coping with that loss, will often find some comfort. And sometimes it will be, as he did, you know, in the form of something he describes as an angel. So for him, it was an angel. Others, it will be the presence of the person who's passed away.
Have you ever gotten to a point where these angelic experiences are glimpses into the future? I mean, do they ever come and tell you about future events?
No, I've not, you know, I've not seen, seen anything like that. I mean, what's interesting is that it is the presence is, omnipotence in the sense that it's got greater powers than the individual who's you know, experiencing it. So it will know the way out. You know, when there's a fire, it will know how to get out of, you know, how to escape the fire, or it will it will be able to, you know, so sometimes there's very specific advice. It seems to show that this has a level of knowledge that's far greater than their own. Some of these people say, you know, I would never have been able to contrive an exit strategy for myself. I was dying. There was no way I was going to survive that situation. And then this being intervened, and it provided me with the kind of directions and guidance that I needed to survive. So it's as if it knows it's greater, it knows more, but it's not like it can predict or forecast the future in some way. I haven't seen examples of that.
We go next to Sylvia in Chatsworth, California. Hi, Sylvia. Thank you.
Hi. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm getting feedback. But hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
I actually did have a future one, but I wanted to share one earlier, but I was listening to you guys. So I'm just going to go with the one I was going to share earlier. About 10 years ago, and I'm whispering because my house is asleep, but about 10 years ago, a friend of mine, Bronwyn, and I, we were in prayer in our home. I was sitting at the table. She was on the floor on her knees. And as we were praying, I saw something enter, and I saw it. I saw it coming towards us, like, you know, it was coming towards us in the distance. But when it entered the room, I saw him fully. I saw him standing there. And she turned in the direction where he was, and she said, "Something's here. Something's right here." I said, "I know. I'm looking at him, you know." And he had this beautiful skirt on. It was like flaps. Beautiful long sleeves, but it had like each flap was a different color, blue marble, and they were all trimmed in like a very pure gold. And he had a scroll with him. He was actually facing Baldwin. He opened the scroll. He stood there and he spoke. He said, "I am Gabriel, and I have a word from the king." So, and he gave a word. I tore up an envelope and I wrote down everything he said. She did not hear it. Neither did she see him. I saw him and I heard him. Later, everything on there, on the paper, or everything that he had said had come to pass. And not then, you know, later it came to pass.
That's magical. We're going to come back and take some more phone calls with John Geiger, author of The Angel Effect. We are not alone. So make sure you're on hold. You just stay there. Don't hang up. And the newer calls. We're having some problems with the west of the Rockies line, by the way. So if you're not getting through, I believe that line could be down. All the others are working splendidly for you. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Linda Moulton Howe is going to join us for an hour to talk about that crop circle formation in California. Some people say that it was created by some people running around in the field. Linda's doing her own investigation. And then, of course, later on in the program, we'll have open lines. We're coming back in a moment. More calls with John Geiger, author of The Angel Effect. John, you talk about the possibility that this angelic experience could be a trainable skill. Explain that.
Well, I guess it relates to the, you know, my belief that certain people are more open to the experience. That you know, certain types of personalities are more willing to accept that this entity can intervene and help them. And as a result of that, I sort of began to investigate some of the, you know, the ancient traditions around things like the centering prayer in Christianity and the meditation in Eastern religions. You know, if you look at those and you see what people are doing, they're actually creating an opening, a door, really, that this, you know, this awareness, this acceptance of the experience can take place. So I think that it is something. I think the centering prayer in Christianity is a very good example of how people have, you know, been able to, through prayer, create a route to the experience of a presence, because you know, in many cases, people will actually enter into a communion with the presence because of that practice. There are other routes one of them that I found that it happens in many different cultures is what the North American Indians described as a spirit quest, where people essentially put themselves in situations of real deprivation. They will go out onto the land. They will be separated from their people. They will be without food. They will be without water. You know, they will be exposed to the elements, and they will actually come back from those sorts of experiences, having, you know, encountered a presence of a powerful spirit. It's something that happens in North American tribal cultures, in the Inuit, with the Inuit in the Arctic, in Africa, and it happened with the desert monks, you know, who would go into the desert in ancient Egypt and subject themselves to unbelievable hardship, and invariably would emerge from these experiences feeling as if they made contact with a powerful, benevolent presence. And depending on the culture, they will assign an identity to that presence. But in each case, they do have that kind of experience. So there are different routes to achieving this. I think it is something that people can evoke in their own lives. But I think the most important thing is when you're in a situation of tremendous stress, and we all go through those periods in our lives, whether it's because of a disease, because of the loss of a loved one, because we're in some catastrophic type occurrence, like a plane crash or a car accident, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You need to be open to the possibility that you will find help in that kind of context. And that help won't be coming from, you know, a flesh and blood person.
If you believe in fallen angels, how come they don't show up? Why is it only the good entities that show up?
I haven't investigated fallen angels. I don't really know. I'm just talking to people who have, and searching out people, examples of people who have been in terribly stressful situations and have come back from those situations to report that they were helped. You know, Ron DeFrancesco, who I mentioned in the Third Man Factor, and I also mentioned in the Angel Effect, the last man out of the South Tower of the World Trade Center, you know, had a sense. He was above the impact zone. He was trapped. Everyone else was trapped, and he was on a landing, and he felt that his way down, his way out was obstructed. There was smoke pouring up. There was flames. There's debris. He felt there was no escape. He sort of slumped down. Others were slumped around him. Some were unconscious. Some were crying. And Ron felt that he was helped. You know, he literally felt that he was helped up and directed, and he was led into the flames, and they felt it was an angel that saw him through several floors of debris and fire, to the point that he reached, a normal clear hallway below that point and was able to escape. And so, you know, it's a very, very powerful, experience that people have, and people are not prepared for it. He was just, you know, at work going about his everyday business as a money market trader.
All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to California, Brea, California. Tim's with us. Tim, you're on with John Geiger. Go ahead.
Hi, George. John, great show.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question for you, John. About 18 years ago, I was driving from Southern California up to Central California coast to visit my brother. It was on a weekend. And as I got up there, it was about midnight because I had worked all day, and I was a supervisor, and there was an emergency. I had to get back. So I turned around. And en route back home, I was driving by Santa Barbara, and I just had a brand new sports car. That's one reason I wanted to take this drive. I had dozed off. I had had a hard time staying awake. And all of a sudden, as I was coming around a sharp turn there, and at a pretty high speed, there was nobody around. All the complete bright light just enveloped the car, the inside of the car, like a flashbulb. And something grabbed that steering wheel. I could feel the force of it and just barely, I just missed going over that edge. And to this day, I have no idea if that was an angelic experience, but I truly believe it had to be. I still can't. I have no other explanation for it. So I'd like to hear your theory.
Did you see anything, Tim? Did you see the hand that so many people
I didn't, but I could feel the force of the hand. I almost knew where it was, too. It was almost in the lower portion of the steering wheel, because it jerked so suddenly, and the force behind it just really startled me, and then everything seemed in slow motion afterwards, and then I pulled aside after that, and I just caught my breath. I was in shock. It was a very, very strange situation.
What do you think of that, John?
That's amazing experience, Tim, and it's not dissimilar from others that I've encountered where people will actually feel there's a woman who lost control in snowy conditions, lost control of her vehicle, and the vehicle was actually flipping, and rolling, and she felt a hand sort of hold on to hers, and she also described, interestingly, as you have, a light, the sense of. And that's something that a number of the people that I've spoken to have described, that there's a white light, there's a light around them, and there is an actual physical force, as you have described. In her case, it was she felt a hand took her own. She ended up upside down in this wreck, still strapped in with her seatbelt, and she felt that this hand was there holding hers until help arrived and kept her. Keep her going. It sounds very much like the kinds of experiences that I'm just, I'm writing about and the sorts of people that have come forward.
Truly remarkable, isn't it?
It is. Cause it defies, that's, I guess, the issue here, that these experiences defy, rational explanations. I mean, I think we may eventually get there. That possibility exists, but there's so many of these cases, and they're each are different, and each are sort of miraculous in their own way. And the interesting journey that I've been on is that, at the end of the day, I sort of have concluded it doesn't really matter what's happening. It's just the fact that it's happening is what's most interesting to me. That very, very rational people and very intelligent people, very straight ahead people are experiencing these sorts of things in their lives. And these experiences have a profound effect on them. And maybe we'll never fully understand what's going on, whether it's the brain, whether it's God, maybe we'll never be able to sort this out. I certainly, have tried over 7 years to try to find a rational, simple explanation. There simply isn't one. We just haven't reached that point. But that doesn't, that lack of understanding doesn't take away from, the power of this experience and the frequency of it. It's one of the most fascinating experiences I think we can have in our lives.
It seems like they really only get involved in life-threatening episodes. Is that the case?
I wouldn't say that. There are, there are many cases where people, I think that is certainly the most prevalent, example that people are in a truly life and death struggle. So whether it's that they're suffering from, a terrible form of cancer, or whether they are an alcoholic, or whether they're in a car accident or a near car accident that would could well cost them their lives, that's the most common example. But there are other cases where the threat is less obvious, and where it's more a question of their failure, their inability to do something, and others that are just, there's one of the women I spoke to that's in the Angel Effect. Her experience came during childbirth, and she was giving birth to one of her children. And it was a home birth, and she felt a presence very vividly during that the most intense the most painful period of that birth, and it helped her through through that. So it can come at situations like that. She wasn't herself under any obvious danger, although she was obviously under stress and in pain. But still she had this experience.
Okay, let's go next to Virginia. Don's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Don, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you this evening?
Good, thank you, Don.
Hope you can hear me okay. I'm on a cell phone.
Yeah, you're okay.
Hey, John.
Hey, Don.
My my circumstance or incident occurred some 12 years ago, and it was not involving any life-threatening events. I was outside working on some bunny hutches. My children acquired some bunnies, and I was snapping them together. And my youngest daughter at the time came out and told me that my wife was on the phone crying. And it was probably 15 or 20 steps from where I was working to the back door. And in that time, a masculine voice, I believe to be benevolent, spoke to me and called me by name, said, "Donald, it's Ted. It's okay. He's with me." And knowledge was injected into me where there was no question, there was no doubt. I knew that this person that my wife was very fond of, grew up with, was passed away. And I walked into the house, and she was, you know, hysterical crying, and I was able to comfort her. But, you know, I was not particularly close to this individual. It was the case that I still to this day don't know why the information was imparted to me, but clear as day, it was not my own voice. It was not audible except for inside my head. And it was the strangest thing. And I've shared it with other people. And I believe they think I'm a nut.
Well, you're not a nut. You've seen enough of these, John. You can weed that out, can't you?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And this is what's interesting. I think this phenomenon is actually underreported. I think people like John, you know, who have that reaction from people that, you know, that may think, oh, that, you know, he's losing it, or there's something not right, makes it so that the large number of people who have the experience don't want to share it. They just don't come forward. And even some of those who contacted me said, look, you know, I want to, you know, they sent me very detailed, unbelievable experiences, but they don't want to share it publicly. So I didn't, of course, use it in the book or publicize it. But so it is, I think it's very common. People are afraid in some cases to come forward and, as Don has done, and share their experiences. I wonder if Don, did you have any sense that this
individual was killed? He's not with us, John.
He's not with us now. Okay. Right. I'd be interested in knowing because you know, I wonder in some of these cases whether there's an intimation that somebody, you know, and almost an expectation that someone is unwell and that we figure out instantly, you know, what. Who it is that's been lost or you know, has passed away, and you know, where that information comes. I'm always trying to, you know, I still, as I say, a few minutes ago, I was saying, ultimately, what's most important is this happens. It doesn't matter how it happens.
It just,
I still
it does
like
happen.
To know how it happened.
Yeah, and whether they're summoned or they show up. That to me, you know, maybe inside, you know, that little voice we have inside of us. Maybe when you're going through this moment of trauma. Maybe you say something like, "Oh, God, save me," or something, and boom, it's done.
Oh, I think in many cases, people, you know, and many people say, you know, I was praying, or I, you know, I was begging for help, or I was, you know, I was, you know, hoping that someone, you know, there. So I think there is often a sort of that element of, you know, in these experiences. Yeah, you know, and as you know, in the Angel Effect, I open with an experience that I had. Excuse me. And you know, in many of these cases, people are in pain or, you know, experiencing difficulty, and they are reaching out in some way. So they're, maybe that's part of the openness to experience I'm talking about. You know, they've opened themselves to the possibility of some help or some assistance, and guess what? It comes.
By the way, I'm going to be in Toronto sometime this year at an event. You might want to come by, Mr. John Geiger.
I would love that, John.
Hey, it'll be at the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
Oh, amazing. I hope you'll give me the details of the date.
Yeah, we'll do that. Let's go to Tammy in Florence, Oregon, wildcard line. Tammy, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, John. Miss John, your name's a little bittersweet for me. It's the name of my little brother that passed away a year before I got shot, and the name of the man that shot me, but all's good. My story is kind of strange, and I don't know how to say it other than I believe that I actually had an angel, one I didn't know for a change, come down. the night before I got shot, this was a deer outside a trailer window. I had told everybody about this, but I even have a picture of the deer, and I'd be happy to send it to you.
And well, why do you think, Tammy, the deer was an angel?
Well, the photo that I took of it, it was talking to me like I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Except I could see it. It had a hole in its right ear, and it told me that at 11:23 tomorrow, you're going to get shot.
Oh, boy.
And
you did.
If you accept it, you will be okay. But if you don't, you will die. I'm shaking telling you this story because it's so heartwarming. I talked to you and Linda once before, George, I'm sorry.
That.
After I got shot, let me go back. The deer told me this. I was there for my dad's 56th birthday, and he started yelling at me to come in from the trailer that I'd gotten in late, so my mom left a key to the camping trailer for me. So I just went in there and went to bed, and he started yelling at me, and I got out, and he says, "Are you crazy?" And I said, "No, Dad, why?" He goes, "Lightning was hitting the trailer."
While you were trying to get in.
He goes, "Are you crazy?" I said, "God loves me." I go into the house and I go to sleep. The next morning, I told my mom, I told my dad, I told my niece, "I'm going to get shot today. If you want me to work on your computers, I better do it now." At 11:23, my mom asked me if I want, or 11 o'clock, my mom asked me if I wanted to go out into a beautiful garden out in the country.
Hold on for a second, Tammy. I'm going to have to hold you over, okay? We'll be right back.